All right, Alexander, let's do an update on what's going on between the United States and Iran, the JCPOA, not only the United States, but the JCPOA and everything going on with the negotiations. And it looks like we're getting close. Iran says that an agreement is right around the corner. And I quote, "There are barriers," and this is a quote, "but they're not unsolvable." That's a quote from Iran. So it looks like we're going to get the deal back in place.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been actually amazing to see how the Iranians have been able to play this administration. I mean, you know, irrespective of what you think of the JCPOA and whether or not you think Donald Trump was right to leave it, I mean, the pattern of the negotiations over this last year, since the new administration took office in Washington, has been remarkable because they came in, talking about all the conditions they were going to impose and how they were going to force these Iranians to come to line and negotiate about limits on their ballistic missiles and on their foreign policy and on their support for people like Hezbollah in Lebanon and all the rest. And with every day that passes, it's been absolutely clear that all those demands that the US made have been one after another dropped. And we now see what started as a negotiation just within weeks evolve in effect into a rout. And we have the situation where the Iranians are now, you know, waving this a scarecrow of a hardline president being elected in a few weeks in Iran, a hardliner who will supposedly want to bring the JCPOA to a stop. So what's now happening is that the US is rushing to make one concession after another to get the Iranians' agreement to have the JCPOA back in place before that election takes place. The Iranians have gained this amazingly, and it just goes to show how, in a way, how desperate the United States, at least this administration, was always to get back into the JCPOA. And they would have been far better advised for their own self-respect if they'd simply announced that fact right at the start, right at the outset, and not gone through the charade of negotiations, which has exposed them as the weak negotiators that they really are, and which has exposed them also as having so few cards left to play where Iran is concerned. The Iranians must be laughing. And the fact that we're having all these comments coming out of Tehran shows that they know it, that they know that they've won this diplomatic round and have won it completely.
Was this about putting a good deal together? And I'm talking from the Biden administration's perspective. Was this about getting a good deal together, one that prevents Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon? Or was this just simply about getting the agreement back in place out of spite because Trump took it off the table? In other words, is this kind of like saying the Biden administration saying, you know what, Obama administration, don't worry, we'll get this JCPOA, we'll get this agreement back together again in order to preserve your legacy. It doesn't matter. Whatever the terms are, that's fine. But we're just going to do this to preserve your legacy and to stick it to the orange man.
I
That's what it
think there's
seems to
lot.
be.
Yeah, I think it's. I think it's. I think there's a very big part of it, which is that at the end of the day, they wanted to get back into the JCPOA because the bad orange man tore it up, and we do the opposite of what the bad orange man does. And also, you know, saying to Obama, he did this great thing, so of course we have to go back to what he was doing. I mean, there is. Let's not underestimate the importance of this. This is an important aspect of the policies of this administration. But I think there is another aspect to it too, which is that what is for the moment the part of the administration which is in the ascendant, and it may not be in ascendant forever or even for very long, but people like Jake Sullivan and Tony Blinken seem to be wanting to sort of disengage in the Middle East so that they can focus instead on China and on the Pacific and on the South China Sea and all that. I mean, it's interesting to note, for example, that the president, Biden, has barely spoken to any of the Middle East leaders. He took ages to talk to Netanyahu. He's barely spoken to the Saudis. And of course, they were very disengaged during the recent conflict in Israel and the Palestinian territories and in Jerusalem. So they want to get out of the Middle East, and they want to get out of the Middle East by doing a deal as quickly as they can with the Iranians, because they don't want to leave this unfinished business of the JCPOA hanging around, because they worry that if they don't have the JCPOA, well, who knows, maybe the Iranians will do something bad, maybe they'll forge ahead and develop nuclear weapons, and that will somehow throw this grand policy and plan into confusion. So they're rushing to sort out the JCPOA, both to spite Trump and protect Obama's legacy, but also in order to win themselves this ceasefire, as they think, in the Middle East, so that they can pull out from there. What they're actually doing, it seems to me, and that's what always happens when you do things in a hurry like this, is that instead of reducing tensions in the Middle East, they may actually be increasing them, because countries that are nervous of Iran are making their decisions. So we see Saudi Arabia now quietly negotiating with Iran in talks that are taking place in Baghdad. And we're seeing the other major power in the Middle East, Israel, which is clearly taking its own steps and which is very, very worried about the fact that the United States looks like it's going to pull out of the Middle East and agree this JCPOA and leave Iran in a very strong position. And it may not be entirely a coincidence that we've just had the sinking of the Khag, which is this huge Iranian ship, which isn't really a warship, but it's a sort of supply ship. And we don't know for a fact that that was due to sabotage, but it might have been. And if it was sabotage, we don't know for a fact that it was Israel, but it could very well have been. And we've seen the head of Israeli intelligence actually saying quite openly that Israel is going to increase its covert activities in Iran because it sees Iran as a growing threat. So, in fact, far from achieving that measure of stability in the Middle East that it might think it is achieving by rushing ahead to sign up to the JCPOA on essentially Iranian terms, what the United States might be doing by rushing the process in this, frankly, increasingly panic-stricken way, because that's how it looks to me, what it might actually be doing is that it may actually be creating more problems and more tensions in the Middle East, which are more careful, more structured, more carefully planned approach to the negotiations, and one which involved other countries and sought to involve them in the negotiations also, and at least brief them about them, might have avoided. But there we are. That's how negotiations, diplomacy is being conducted by the present administration, all in a rush, without a great deal of thought, all to do things very quickly, which might have been better done and more wisely done if they'd been done properly and carefully.
Yeah, I would like to negotiate with the Biden administration. It looks pretty easy, I must admit. But yeah, I was going to ask you about Israel, because we do possibly we have a new government. So I was going to ask you about their response to all of this. Also, what about Russia? What about the Europeans? What about China? It is the JCPOA. There are other people involved, other countries, other regions involved in this. Are they looking at this and saying this is too easy?
Well, of course they are. I mean, look, let's actually talk about Russia. What does the United States do as soon as the administration comes into office? It agrees to extend the New START treaty with Russia, which is, of course, exactly what Donald Trump said he wouldn't do. He wanted to get more negotiations. He wanted to involve the Chinese in the strategic arms negotiations. Maybe that was impractical. Maybe that was impossible. But you throw away all of that with a single telephone call. Really quite remarkable. I mean, you know, as you rightly said, I mean, more and more countries must be saying to themselves, well, this is the administration we need to start negotiating with, because, you know, it comes over all strong and then it folds right away. That new trade negotiations going to happen, by the way. They're on the way between China and the US. They're just about to start. I wonder how they're going to go. But anyway, that's just making that general observation. What are the Russians, the Chinese, the European Union, all the rest going to do about the situation? Well, the European Union, we can forget, because they're all over the place. I mean, they're not just all over the place. They're simultaneously all over the place and nowhere. I mean, during the conflict in Israel and the Palestinian territories, 10 days ago, it was quite remarkable. They weren't even able to produce a statement, let alone send somebody there or talk to anybody. I mean, we can forget them. At one point in time, the European Union did try to involve itself in the diplomacy with Iran. And these negotiations, which are taking place in Vienna between the Americans and the Iranians, it's the European Union which is supposedly mediating. But no one takes that seriously. The European Union is essentially absent as a significant player in Middle East diplomacy. The Russians are very active in Middle East diplomacy. They've just announced that they're going to work with increasing defence cooperation with Iran. In fact, there was just an announcement about that on TASS the other day, and they seem to be looking at selling fighter jets to Iran and strengthening their links with Iran. And of course, as we've discussed in many programmes, they're working hard to stabilise Syria. And I did a programme recently about this enormous military base that they're now building in northeast Syria. And we've now got Russian bombers patrolling the eastern Mediterranean, something we have never seen before at any time in history. I mean, this is something completely new. So the Russians are moving in a very organised and structured way. And they're strengthening their diplomatic hand and their overall geopolitical position. And the Chinese are moving in also. They're coming along to Iran. They've done this massive deal to build up Iranian infrastructure. They're heavily involved in Saudi Arabia also. And so both countries, both of the two Eurasian giants, Russia and China, are going to be building links and connections across the Middle East, exploiting the situation as the United States quietly withdraws. But of course, the major winner at the moment, let's be straightforward about it, is Iran. It's waited out the United States, stood its ground. It may have a chaotic political system, a dysfunctional financial system, an economy which is actually rather more resilient than many people understand and imagine. But despite its many structural problems, it's actually seen the Americans off. They must be very pleased with themselves at the moment.
They got the big guy in office.
Indeed.
Got the big guy in office. That's all they needed. Came into office and that was that.
Absolutely. You got it right.
All right. All right, we'll leave it there, guys. Look for us on Odyssey, on BitChute, and on Super U, the free speech video platform. Super U, you'll find a link for that down below. And look for us on Locals. We'll be running all kinds of Locals promotions soon, so check us out on Locals as well. You'll find all those links down below. Alexandra's channel, my channel, The Duran, we're all on those platforms. You can find all our videos there. And go to The Duran Shop, 10% off. There you will get 10% when you use the code Real News. In the checkout, you'll find the link for that down below as well. Take care.